Well, it's always nice to have guests in the room. We're thankful for the families that have come tonight for the child dedications. Unfortunately, you have to suffer through a short sermon ahead of time, but I'll try to make it as painless as possible. This is the first week of Advent, and each year we remind ourselves that Advent is not a four-week celebration of Christmas. Advent is the preparation for Christmas. Christmas is the celebration of Christmas. Advent is the remembering of the time before that, that in-between kind of space, that space between a longing and a need, the space between the desire for salvation and the arrival of that salvation. And so each week of Advent kind of celebrates and remembers a certain part of that journey that leads up to the manger and the straw and the, you know, wise men and all the things we think of in regards to Christmas. And I'll be honest with you, even though every year I preach Advent, and we're 11 years in now where we've celebrated Advent every year, I still forget, until I get the scriptures for that week out of the lectionary, that we're not celebrating Christmas yet. And I also equally forget that the first week of Advent is always reserved for prophecy. Words that look ahead to salvation. And for some reason, I just can never remember that ahead of time. And when Caroline came to me, Caroline, who's the planner on our staff, I'm the more, you know, faithful one, just shows up and does what God says. But Caroline's a planner, and Caroline was saying, hey, we got a bunch of babies that, you know, everyone wants them dedicated. We need to find a couple weeks where we can either split them up or do them all in 1 week. And is the first week of Advent bad? I said, no, it's Advent. You know, Christmas, baby Jesus, are you kidding me? What better time could there be for having a bunch of child dedications in the first week of Advent? Because I forgot that the first week of Advent is always some kind of apocalyptic, prophetic kind of text. You guys already heard Luke 21, verses 25 through 36 read. I won't read it again for time's sake. It'll be on the screen, but let me just highlight some of the great Christmassy words that you'll find on a lot of the cards that you get in the mail in the next couple weeks. Merry Christmas. The sun, moon, and stars and earth are in distress. Fainting, fearing, foreboding what is coming to the world. The powers of heaven will be shaken. Be on guard so your hearts are not weighed down. Dissipation and drunkenness. Have you ever gotten that on a Christmas letter? I haven't. Although I'm considering it now this year for us. We haven't done ours yet. If there's some way, Sarah, for us to fit that in. Dixon, dissipation, drunkenness. I mean, that kind of, there's something there. The worries of life. Don't let the day catch you unexpectedly. Escape all these things. Be alert. You will stand before the Son of Man. Merry Christmas, everybody. Let's bless those babies. What do you say? I can't believe we'll have to talk about the apocalypse on the day we dedicate six super cute kids. And these apocalyptic texts are always, even if there aren't kids involved, they're always hardest to preach because they're always like just detailed enough that you feel like you have to kind of pick them apart and drill down in them a little, but they're also just vague enough that you can't really interpret them very specifically. They kind of leave you more with a feeling or a sense of things than they do anything real particular. Now, that may not be true of some of the churches that you've gone to where people really interpret it all the way down, and they'll tell you, like, next Tuesday this is happening based on what we read in Revelation or whatever. I do not believe that we can do that. I don't think that's what those texts are for. Certainly, if God wanted us to know those kind of specifics, God could have given us those kind of specifics. But the signs are among the sun and the moon and the stars, distress among the nations. I don't know about you, but that kind of feels like every day ever. I mean, I don't know, I mean, or unless you don't watch the news, I mean, it's kind of what's happening in the world all the time, right? It's not real specific. It's hard to really drill down and get something factual out of that. So you're left with this broad sense of maybe angst or confusion, or hopefully, with this text, some faith and some hope. You know, the word apocalypse comes from a word, and the root meaning is to uncover or to reveal. It's where we get the revelation of John, right? The book of Revelation. It's to uncover or to reveal. Apocalypses are those things that are either grand or small that uncover the truth amidst the confusion. They kind of turn the lights on. They pull the covers back. It allows us to see things for what they really are in ourselves or in our world. Those are what apocalypses are. So I was trying to think about how child dedications and apocalypses. I was trying to think about all these things, and apocalypse is revealing things. It's pulling the covers back, and it shines the light on who we really are. And then I thought, this is perfect for Child Dedication Sunday. I love my child more than anything, but she is a little apocalypse. There have been very few apocalypses in my life, like the birth of my daughter. I have never been more confused and genuinely frightened than when we brought her home. And I'm going to say all this from my perspective, and let me go ahead and say this. I know whatever I'm talking about was 10 times worse for my wife. I know she got the worst end of the deal, so I'm not trying to make myself the martyr of this situation. This may be newsflash to you, but it's a little harder on the moms than it is the dads. But still, from my perspective, I don't think I've ever been more confused or genuinely frightened than we brought her home. When we had Lillian, of course, first child, all the anxiety that comes with that, you hear the joke all the time, but it really is true. You kind of can't believe they're letting you leave with this baby, right? And our nurses did a really good job, and I'm not sure where this is in the nurse's code, but they did a really good job of scaring the daylights out of us. We're holding our daughter on the couch in the hospital room, and of course, you know, everyone's like falling out. They're so tired and they're exhausted. And the nurse proceeded to tell us a story of what happens when someone falls asleep with the baby in the arm and they accidentally drop the baby, and then this horrible, I mean, they just scared me to death. I think that part maybe scared me more than Sarah. I'm not sure. Or I demonstrated more fully. I just knew for sure that if I fell asleep while holding her, she would immediately jump out of my arms, burst into flames on the way to the floor, and God only knows what would happen next, right? I mean, it was just instant tragedy. I knew it. I knew it so deeply that I spent, it happened a good bit, but there was about 1 week in particular where Sarah and I were doing shift work. Our daughter wouldn't sleep unless she was being held. So there was a lot of like shift work being done, right? I'll go to bed at 7, then I'll wake up at 10, and then you try and get a few hours of sleep after you feed her. And so I would just be, you know, rocking her. And when it was my turn to sleep for a week, and it would happen once, twice, sometimes three or four times an hour, I would wake up and I would be on my hands and knees in my bed, and I would be pulling all the sheets and blankets off the bed, like in a sweat. Because I was kind of dreaming and awake the same, I could see the covers moving, knowing the baby was underneath the covers and was suffocating, because you're not supposed to co-sleep or tragedy immediately, right? Because they scared, and I had it so deeply ingrained in me, I'd be pulling back the covers, and it would take me a while to calm down and fall back asleep, and then I'd do it again, and then I'd do it again, and then I'd do it again. I mean, I was terrified. There wasn't much drunkenness or dissipation, though lack of sleep is pretty close. But there was this tendency to kind of sink into the worries of what I couldn't control. This kind of broad, unspecific anxiety and dread, which coexisted somehow with the most amazing, you know, just couldn't be happier and more excited. It was this weird, weird place to be in. At times, it felt like the end of the world as I knew it, and in a sense, it was exactly that. But I was uncovered. Not just because I threw it all on the ground in a fitful sleep, but I mean, really, and this is something Sarah and I talked about a lot. It was like, and this just shows that I'm arrogant. I thought I was a pretty kind of selfless person. I'm a minister. I don't know if you know that or not. So by nature, I can't be very selfish, right? And it's like then when there's a child there and they depend on you for everything and they won't sleep and you can't do the things you want to do and all of a sudden you're resenting a baby. How do you resent a baby, right? And like all these truths about myself, all these things were getting uncovered. And I didn't really care for a lot of them because, as it turns out, I wasn't quite as selfless or smart or amusing as I thought I was. I really could not entertain her nearly like I thought I'd be able to. It was an apocalypse for me. It was an uncovering. It was uncomfortable. And there were moments that were just terrifying, white-knuckled in that. And it didn't, of course, now, you know, 4.5 years in, I realize it didn't need to be quite that bad. And I'm not real happy with the nurses for the way they handled us in the hospital. But even in the midst of this kind of moments of dread or anxiety or all these kind of things that happened. Even in the midst of those, when I was kind of in the deepest part of it, there were also these unmistakable and overwhelming signs of grace right in the middle of all the insanity. The same little agent of chaos would give these glimpses of heaven that were undeniable, right? Or someone would show up with something we needed right when we needed it, or a friend would just show up when we needed them to show up, or whatever the thing was, there were these moments where not only was the dread uncovered and the bad news of what I didn't want to know about myself was uncovered, but also the grace of God, love, was uncovered in a very beautiful way. I remember one particular night, I was trying, without much success, to calm Lillian down. Sarah had fed her, handed her off, and Sarah was going to try to get a little bit of sleep. And again, at this point, our daughter was she's awesome, but she was a horrible sleeper. And I had to rock her to keep her asleep. And it was one of those things where Sarah only got to sleep if I could keep Lillian asleep and quiet. And Rebecca Lauderdale actually gave us sound machines that are the best thing we've ever received as a gift from a human being. And I think we had both of them going in your room at that point, so that you just, even if one of us was screaming bloody murder, we were hoping that she wouldn't hear. But Lillian was just going and going and going, just screaming. And I changed diapers, and we did everything that I knew to do. And so I'm holding her in the chair, and I'm rocking back and forth, and I'm trying to get her to be quiet, because I know eventually Sarah's going to hear, and that mom thing will kick in, and no matter how tired she is, she's going to come out to save her baby from her wretched husband. And so I just want to be a hero just for a moment, right? So I'm rocking, and I got to that point where I've tried everything. I've walked around, I've rocked in place, I turned on the TV, I did everything I could to try and, you know. And finally I started doing the thing that you do when you're a super frustrated parent to a child who doesn't yet know English, and I started whisper yelling at her, which is, I don't want to wake Sarah up, so I don't yell at her, but I start doing the, "What is wrong? What do you want? Just tell me what you want, and I will do it. Like I don't care how much it costs. Just tell me what you want." And I'm doing this thing, and I'm whisper yelling at her, right? And then she's not responding at all. Rude. She's all bundled up and just her little face sticking out of there, just yelling at me, you know. She won't keep the pacifier in, and I'm rocking, and I lean my head back on the chair, and so then I whisper yell at God for a while, and I'm trying to, you know, I'm probably poking her in the eye at this point. I don't know. I'm just trying to get the pacifier in. Like, why? Just please, just let her be clear, Lord. I don't know, why am I such a bad dad? I thought I'd be a good dad. You know, like, and do this whole thing. I'm whisper yelling at God, also known as prayer, because I'm a pastor that counts as prayer. So, and we're doing that, and then all of a sudden, you know, I feel her kind of latch on, because you know your fingers in the pacifier. I feel her latch on, and then she gets quiet for a second, and it's like this moment of just, oh my goodness, you know. I'm like, oh, maybe things are gonna be okay. And I look down. And I think maybe she's, I try to be as still as possible. I think maybe she fell asleep, right? And I look down, and she's on the pacifier, just making the little noise in the pacifier, but just wide-eyed, awake. And I had, you know, tried to swaddle her. As it turns out, I'm a phenomenally terrible swaddler. But I had tried, and as always, you know, her hands just come out. It doesn't matter. She's like a ninja. And I look down, and it's not just her little face there anymore, but there's one hand that's crept up like this. And there's one middle finger just sticking up. And she's just wide-eyed, sucking on the pacifier, just flipping me the world's tiniest bird. Now, up to this point in my life, being flipped off by someone had never been a sign of grace from God. But it was absolutely one of those moments for me. I mean, it was one of those moments where my angst and my anger and my everything just went away. And it was just a moment of grace. It was that moment of, it's okay. Stop taking yourself so seriously. This is just a baby, and babies cry, right? Get your phone and get a picture of this while you can. You know, the important things that you need to know in life. But it was this clear message to me from God to take a breath and to not be overwhelmed, that it's fine. And again, don't take yourself so seriously in this moment. And in what can be that really lonely time in the middle of the night when you're trying to deal with a baby or whatever, was suddenly a I'm not alone moment, right? And ultimately, I think that's what this text is about. Not flipping you off, but about those moments of grace. About keeping our eyes and our ears and our hearts open to those small demonstrations in the midst of the chaos. It is written to those who are wrung out, distressed, oppressed. Their money's been taken from them. Their land's been taken from them. Their faith has been, you know, is or their temple's getting ready to be destroyed. All of these things. For people for whom even the sun and moon and stars seem to be on tilt. It is written for those who can't see the light in the darkness. And to them, God says, stay alert. Keep your eyes open. Look for the little revelations. See the leaves on the tree? They're a sign of what's to come. Look for the leaves. The little reminders of grace and the clues of salvation that are scattered all around God's creation. Because these signs are apocalypses. They're little revelations of the truth of God's goodness and God's redemption. Even in the sometimes overwhelming apocalypses of darkness in this world. In a world that can feel too lost, these leaves are little sometimes pin lights to orient ourselves towards. This is good news for us because we as Christians are not supposed to be Pollyanna. We're not supposed to act like everything is okay all the time. Obviously, it's not. There's things that are broken in this world. There's things that are broken in our own lives. Not sleeping at night because of a baby is terrible. It's dark and long, and some of you are, I almost got an amen for the first time in a long time from some moms in the room. But look for the leaves. Look for the little signs of what is also true about the goodness and grace and love of God. Now, those things may not look the way we expect. They may not arrive in the time we wish they would. For Israel, this suffering nation of people who desperately wanted a warrior king who would ride in on the horse with a sword and take over, they got a crying, wriggling baby that needed his diaper changed in a stable. You gotta keep your eyes open or you'll miss it. One of the things that's always been such an interesting thought to me is, you know, this Christmas story that we so revere now. We have, you know, the little sets at our house and we look at it and we do this whole thing. How many people were within a quarter mile of that actual event and never knew it? I think we all tend to think of ourselves like if I lived in the next neighborhood over, I'd have been right over there with the shepherds, right? The leaves are hard to see sometimes. It may not be how we expect. It may be in the form of a wrinkled little ball of tears and giggles and sleeplessness, which is a strange hope indeed. But salvation is near. During the season of Advent, it's not all Hallmark cards and Hallmark movies. We acknowledge that the darkness is real, that the brokenness is real, but that it doesn't get the final word. We are not forgotten, and we are not alone. Whether it's the feeding times that are keeping you up at night, or cable news, look for the little graces. Look for the leaves that are strewn about, because they tell the most important and grandest truth about it all. Let's pray.